Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Anxiety and Exercise in MS. This webinar and telelearning series is brought to you by CanDoMS and the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. My name is Brian Thompson, and I'm a programs manager for CanDoMS, and I will be your moderator this evening. For those of you that are new to our organization, CanDoMS is an innovative provider of lifestyle empowerment programs for people living with MS and their support partners. Through our programs, we empower people to manage their disease and move beyond their MS by adopting active and healthy lifestyle behaviors. Please visit the CanDoMS website, mscandu.org, to learn more about CanDoMS's online and nationwide in-person programs. CanDoMS is excited to partner with the National MS Society to bring you 15 webinars in 2016. The mission of the National MS Society is to help people affected by MS live their best lives as they stop MS in its tracks, restore what has been lost, and end MS forever. Explore the Society's programs, services, resources, and connection opportunities at nationalmssociety.org. We're really excited that you're all joining us this evening for what will be a really interesting and invigorating webinar, and we encourage you to be an active participant. So we have two great presenters, but you're also part of this. So please, in the lower left-hand corner of your screen, you'll see a chat box, and you can type in any questions that you have along the way into that chat box. And at the end of the presentation, we're going to save about 10 to 15 minutes to try to answer as many questions as we can. So please join us this evening, and because this webinar is being recorded, all your lines have been muted, so the only way to ask questions is through that chat box. Also really important, we get this question a lot, is we will email each and every one of you a PDF copy of tonight's slides, along with an article that our two presenters wrote together on anxiety and exercise. So if you feel like we're moving a little too fast, don't stress out. We will email you a PDF version of those slides, and the webinar in its entirety will be available to view at your convenience starting on Thursday. You can go onto our website, mscandu.org, and you can stream all of our webinars at your convenience. So at this point, it's my honor to introduce our two esteemed presenters. First, we have Dr. Megan Beyer, who is a rehabilitation psychologist and clinical researcher specializing in MS at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine in Baltimore. Dr. Beyer obtained her PhD from Yeshiva University in New York and completed a two-year National Multiple Sclerosis Society-funded rehabilitation research fellowship in the Department of Medicine at the University of Washington. Her research and clinical focus is the cognitive and emotional symptoms common to MS. And Mandy Roerig received her doctorate of physical therapy from the University of Nebraska Medical Center. Mandy is a therapist at Horizon Rehabilitation Centers in Omaha, where she specializes in the rehab of individuals with MS and other neurological conditions. Nationally, Mandy serves on the National MS Society's Professional Resource Center and Content Advisory Team, and she has been a programs consultant for CanDoMS for almost 10 years. So we're really excited to have Mandy and Megan join us this evening, and I'm going to turn the floor over to them.
Okay. Great. So this is Megan Beyer, and I'm going to start off the presentation.
Great. Thanks, Brian. Thanks, Megan. Thank you all of you for joining us this evening. Today we're going to talk about how to work out your worries, how to manage anxiety and multiple sclerosis. So we're going to start by visiting about what exactly is anxiety. It's that extreme, overwhelming sense of apprehension and fear, and is unfortunately quite common among folks who have MS. The incidence of anxiety is approximately 20%, as you can see, among people with MS compared to 5% in the general population. So clearly, anxiety is a common and unfortunately quite challenging symptom that many people with MS and their families are forced to manage. But we want to reassure you that you're not alone, and tonight we are together going to strategize some solutions to help you. So when we talk about anxiety, I think it's helpful to talk about what's going on in our bodies when we experience anxiety or stress. versus when we are at rest or more relaxed state. So this very complicated picture is actually two systems, and I'm going to mark that up, our parasympathetic system and our sympathetic nervous system. So knowing and understanding what's going on in our bodies helps us to better understand and hopefully develop some good strategies to help us manage these feelings. So again, the two parts of the nervous system we're going to talk about are the parasympathetic, or the rest or relaxed state of our nervous system, and then the sympathetic part of our nervous system. So let's talk about the parasympathetic first. During the parasympathetic nervous system, it's again when we are at rest, our eyes are in a position of focus, we are able to be relaxed, we're salivating, we're digesting foods, our lungs are in a nice relaxed state, and of course our bowel and bladders are operating as they should. Essentially, that parasympathetic nervous system is responsible for that rest and digest state. And the sympathetic nervous system, we'll talk about this one over here now, on the other hand, helps our bodies, rather, ramp up in a time of stress or in a time of anxiety. Kind of like what we're doing now, a webinar, public speaking. It's our fight or flight function in our nervous system. So our eyes dilate to kind of maximize our visual input. Digestion kind of comes to a halt. Salivation comes to a halt because it's not necessary. And our heart rate increases. Our lungs relax so we can breathe deeply and really maximize our breath to help us move and react quickly. And why we felt like this was relevant to kind of discuss these two symptoms, because some of the body sensations that you feel during periods of anxiety are also common body sensations that you feel during exercise. And we're referring to those symptoms or those sensations like increased heart rate or deep breathing. Those are two sensations that you feel when you exercise. So exercise, in theory, can help kind of train or acclimate or desensitize your nervous system to similar stress-like sensations. So that being said, now that we kind of know what might be happening during periods of stress and anxiety, let's pass it on to Megan to talk to us a little bit more about different types of anxiety. And I'll advance the slide for you, Megan.
Thanks so much. Okay, so I'm going to start off by talking a little bit about what we know about anxiety in general and what we know about anxiety in multiple sclerosis. Stepping back a little bit, we know quite a bit about what happens with depression in MS, but anxiety is still an emerging area. One of the reasons for this is that it's a bit more difficult to study. If you look at this list, there's a number of different types of anxiety. Depression is seen as sort of one construct. So when we're trying to go at studying anxiety in MS, we have to consider all of these different types of MS, or all these different types of anxiety. I've starred generalized anxiety disorder in this list because it's one of the most common overall in most people, and it's one of the most common forms of anxiety in MS. So let's dive a little bit deeper into these different types. On this slide, I've put in an anxiety disorder decision tree, or kind of what's taught to a lot of physicians or providers about how to go about parceling out what type of anxiety you might have if you come to the doctor's office and are telling them that you're having these kinds of symptoms. The first portion there you'll see is treating depression. So anxiety and depression are often co-occur together. And it's quite common that anxiety can also be impacted by things like antidepressants. So if depression is treated, that might also help your anxiety. However, if we take a step beyond depression, let's look at the specifics of different kinds of anxiety. A doctor might ask you questions such as, do you have a history of trauma? Do you have panic attacks? Do you worry on a daily basis, or do you have obsessions and compulsions? Obsessions are things like thoughts that you can't get out of your mind, and compulsions are things that you do to control those obsessions. So if you have that kind of symptom, you might be checked for something like OCD. If you have a history of trauma, you might be checked for something like PTSD. If you have daily uncontrollable worry, that might be a factor of generalized anxiety disorder. if you have panic attacks, it's a little bit more complex because panic attacks can occur alone, or they can occur in the context of something like social phobia or social anxiety, or in reaction to a specific type of phobia like a fear of dogs, a fear of flying, or even a fear of needles. So let me focus in on generalized anxiety disorder because, like I said previously, that's really the most common form of anxiety in multiple sclerosis. Generalized anxiety has two key features. It's this excessive or chronic worry, the what-if type statements. What if I lose my job? What if my husband gets in a car accident on his way home from work? What if I don't have enough money to pay the bills at the end of the day, end of the month? So it's this excessive or chronic worry that is occurring on a daily basis. We also see sort of a general sense of physical tension or nervousness on a daily basis. So those are two key features of generalized anxiety disorder. Now, I noticed one of the questions that came to us before we even started this webinar was, you know, why might anxiety be more common in multiple sclerosis? So I'm going to focus in on that, and then I'll go over these are the actual diagnostic criteria for GAD. There's kind of three thoughts or three main theories of why anxiety and specifically generalized anxiety might be more common in MS. First, as you all know, there's a lot of uncertainty in living with MS. So if you have something like a relapsing form of the disease, you might worry about when and if there'll be a next exacerbation. If you have a progressive form, you might worry about how that progression might impact your life or your family's lives. So there's a lot of uncertainty, so it might be a reaction to living with this kind of diagnosis. There's also some emerging evidence that anxiety, like depression, may actually be a symptom of the disease or a consequence of neural or biological changes. Finally, if we look at this diagnostic criteria, you'll notice that many of the symptoms that diagnose generalized anxiety disorder are actually symptoms of multiple sclerosis. So three that I'm going to point out are things like being easily fatigued, difficulty concentrating, sleep disturbance. These are all symptoms that are just common in MS in general. So if you have the worry piece on top of it, you automatically meet criteria for this diagnosis. So it's just a little bit easier to meet criteria, which might be another reason why it's more common. So as Mandy pointed out initially, about 40 to over 50% of people with MS experience anxiety. And the reason there's that range is because it depends on how you analyze anxiety or how you measure it. So is it generalized anxiety? Is it incorporating all of the different types of anxiety disorders? And you'll see at the bottom here there's the point prevalences or the prevalences of different types of anxiety in MS. So panic disorder, social phobia, specific phobia, PTSD, they're all hovering around 2 to 3%. Obsessive compulsive disorder is about 6% of people with MS. Generalized anxiety occurs in about 20% of people with MS, and that's quite a bit when you compare to the general population. There's about 5 to 6% of people. So it's also been associated with things like exacerbations, pseudo-exacerbations, and depression. So it's really important that we address these symptoms. So I'm going to turn it back over to Mandy, who's going to talk to us a little bit more about exercise and how that might be a factor that can help us.
Thanks, Megan. So one way to help reduce anxiety is through exercise. So I want to visit a little bit more about the effects of exercise on our moods in general. So the first thing that exercise can do is elevate endorphins. Everyone's probably heard of endorphins, but really do we know what they are? So endorphins are chemicals released into our brain and our bodies when we exercise. They're essentially, they block the perception of pain, and they release this kind of feel-good chemical into our body. It's that runner or that exercise high that some people talk about. And really, truly, what happens is the endorphins attach to the nerve receptors, and they're the same ones that pain medications block as well. So it's interesting that works even with exercise. That second point, research suggests that exercise in any form can be helpful. So it doesn't matter whether you exercise alone or with others, indoors, outdoors, with a personal trainer or not, they all have a positive effect on our mood. Now, well, undoubtedly, there's a lot of positive influence that exercise can have on us. Unfortunately, it's not a cure, and we need to keep that in mind, that it's just a tool that we can use to help us manage our anxiety. And regular exercisers generally are less depressed than their inactive counterparts, and this was demonstrated in a study that was followed up a year after. So this just suggests that long-term, consistent exercise has kind of a cumulative or perhaps even a protective effect on our bodies. So what else do we know? Moving our muscles can help us to aid our anxiety. Exercise may be as effective as an antidepressant, which is really cool for mild to moderate depression is what we know. However, it's truly most effective, what the literature says, it's most effective when in combination with another form of management therapy. So we're suggesting talk therapy or other types of medication. Resistance training and mixed training, so we're talking like interval training, also is well supported in the literature, but unfortunately aerobic exercise is more well researched, and thus far it's suggesting that it seems to be more effective for the management of anxiety than other modes of exercise. And lastly, it's unclear the exercise intensity required to help. So we don't know, in other words, we don't know absolutely how much we should exercise or how much we should prescribe, let alone what type of exercise we should prescribe to help people with their anxiety. So on one hand, you could be like, oh, well, that's no good. We don't know what we need precisely to help us get better. But then on the flip side of the coin, this is good because that means there's lots of freedom to choose the type of exercise and the intensity of exercise that suits you, that you will adhere to, and that you enjoy the best. So let's talk about bringing some of that research to real life. So let's talk about aerobic exercise first. Aerobic exercise is literally that exercise that requires oxygen. But in more practical terms, it's the exercise that you do at a lower to moderate intensity that can be sustained for a longer period of time. So examples might include walking or swimming or biking, jazzercise, whatever you can do for a sustained period of time. Now, more specifically, the research related to multiple sclerosis suggests that 20 minutes is kind of the ideal duration of light, moderate, or even high-intensity exercise can help mood for up to 45 minutes after the activity is completed. And furthermore, folks who have more advanced MS can still have really positive mood-boosting effects by even using an arm bike. The research is suggesting that more frequent sessions of exercise are generally more effective, and that in as little as 5 minutes, you can start to generate some of those mood-boosting effects and some of those positive chemical changes, those endorphins that we get in our body. However, the recommended duration that we really encourage is around more of that 20 to 30-minute mark. That last point points out that medications can interfere with the heart rate response. And I want to bring this up because sometimes other folks are on medications like beta blockers, and beta blockers can interfere with how our heart rate responds to exercise or an elevation or stress. So it may buffer the response. So for that reason, we recommend using a scale called an RPE scale. And actually, I'll go to the next slide so that we can chat a bit more about what RPE is. So RPE is Rating of Perceived Exertion Scale. It's a 0 to 10 scale that quantifies your perception of exertion. So as you can tell, each number corresponds to a feeling that you're feeling while you're exercising. So 0 is you sitting on the couch relaxing, 10 is, oh my gosh, I'm working way harder. I think I can't do any more, absolutely no more. So it's similar to that 0 to 10 pain scale that we're all accustomed to using or being asked when we're in the clinic. So, for example, if you're riding a bike, a good intensity for you to feel like you're exercising at for maximizing your mood would be about a 3 to 5 out of 10. And that would give you that mood boosting and your aerobic effect. So that moderate to kind of strong intensity exercise. Okay, we'll pass the baton back over to Megan to talk a little bit about cognitive behavioral therapy.
Okay, so we wanted to touch on exercise, but we also wanted to talk a little bit about how talk therapy might be helpful. And cognitive behavioral therapy is a really nice fit with exercise. As you'll see, there's behaviors involved in cognitive behavioral therapy, and exercise is a really good example of those. So many of you might be familiar with this, but cognitive behavioral therapy basically means that what you think and what you do affects the way you feel. So we all have triggers in our lives. Triggers might be positive, negative, or neutral, and those triggers might impact, will start or impact what I call an emotional cycle. So that involves thoughts about the trigger, behaviors that are impacted by both the thoughts you have about the trigger and maybe the trigger itself, and then body sensations that might come from both of those. All of those factors influence our emotions. So let's dive in a little bit deeper here. So triggers are anything that might start this emotional cycle. They can be a situation, aspects of your environment, or even aspects of your history. A few things here that I have listed is getting a diagnosis of MS or living with MS, financial concerns, negative feedback from a work supervisor, conflict with a significant other or a loved one, maybe getting honked at by another driver on your way to work, history of abuse, death of a loved one. But it doesn't all have to be negative. Triggers can also be positive. So things like getting a hug from a friend or family member, or even getting a phone call from somebody you haven't talked to in a while.
Megan.
Okay, great. So as we all saw that, you know, pretty much all of those things are common for at least one person, but many people or many of you have those triggers that we all saw. So another aspect of this, of cognitive behavioral therapy are thoughts. So what's going through your mind after you have a trigger? What are the images? So it doesn't just have to be thoughts. It can be images. On this slide, there's a number of different thought patterns that are common to most people. In some ways, these thought patterns are really helpful. They help our brains organize and interpret information in our environment, but they also can be unhelpful. So look at the should or the must, for example. If you were to think, I should be cleaning right now, that might be a fact that it might be true, but that thought, I should be cleaning right now, might also cause some anxiety or some stress. So shoulds and musts are things that could be a thought that could be a trigger anxiety. So take a look at this when you get a chance, when Brian sends these slides to all of you. See if any of these thought patterns are things that are typical for you, and then try and start noticing them in your daily life. The next thing I'm going to talk about are behaviors or actions. We all do things in response to triggers or thoughts or emotions. So I wanted to give a little bit of a personal example here. The other day, I was riding my bike to work, and a car whizzed past me pretty quickly. I started imagining, so I had some of those images in my mind, as I was talking about earlier, a scenario of being hit by a side mirror. And all of a sudden, that fight or flight response that Mandy was talking about started kicking in. I felt really anxious. I was worried. I started looking around at the cars around me. I noticed that feeling. And then I took a step back, an internal step back, and I noticed what my body was doing. My hands had tightened around the handlebars. In fact, my arms, my shoulders, everything on my upper body had really tightened. So my body behaviorally responded to that anxiety or those thoughts and images. So it could be something small like that, or it could be something big, isolating yourself from others if you feel a sense of social anxiety, crying because of frustration, checking your heart rate because your heart rate is racing and you start feeling worried about that, avoiding other things like flying or specific people or going to doctor's appointments, procrastinating, reassurance seeking. That might be going and reading the same website over and over again, or trying to suppress thoughts that trigger thoughts of anxiety. So all of these are behaviors or actions that you do in response to a trigger or even thoughts. The next section is body sensations. So Mandy touched on this a little bit, but this is how your body responds to anxiety or stress. You might feel tired, so your fatigue might actually be worse. You might have some cold sweats, or your hands might feel clammy. You might feel a pounding heart or increased rate of breathing. You might have stomach problems. You might have trouble sleeping. You might have pain. So our bodies also respond to triggers, thoughts, behaviors, and emotions. We're going to switch over to – okay. So I wanted to kind of put this all together with a few scenarios. And typically if I'm working with somebody and I'm trying to use this type of treatment with them to have them first start noticing their thoughts, behaviors, and body sensations, I might give them a chart like this to fill in. So I might have you track for a week, what are situations that brought up some anxiety for you, or what are some situations that triggered some frustration or worry? What are the thoughts that went through your mind? What are the body sensations that you had, and what are the behaviors that you did in response to those things? Because we're all different, and we all have different things that might be triggers for us. So these are just a few examples. And some of these are actually ones that I've heard from people that I've worked with. So maybe you're considering a new job or you're considering returning to school, and the thought is, you know, what if my symptoms increase, or what if I can't keep up? What if I progress? A second situation is maybe you're at a party. This is nothing to do with MS, right? This is just kind of life, maybe family situation. So you look over, you see your dad, he's a little older, he's a little unsteady, and you think, my father looks too unsteady to carry that plate of food. Another, you know, kind of MS example is you got a yearly MRI, and you have to wait the week to 2 weeks before you get the results. So you might have some worries about that. What if they find something? You know, will I be able to cope with these symptoms? So putting it all together, filling in this next section, if you have this thought of, you know, considering a new job or returning to school and you think, you know, what will happen in the future, you might have some insomnia. You might stay up at night thinking about that. You might have a pounding heart, and maybe you avoid submitting an application. Again, this is an example. Everybody responds to these kinds of situations differently. At a party, you look at your dad, you worry, oh, maybe, you know, he's a little unsteady to carry that food. Maybe your breath quickens a little bit and you run over, the behavior is you run over and you grab his plate because you're worried about it. You get that yearly MRI, you're waiting for the results. You have some insomnia, you're staying up at night thinking about what the results might be. Maybe you have stomach cramps, some sweats. You check your medical record if you have an electronic medical record daily to see if those results have come in. Maybe you call the clinic a few times. You read about MRI results online, so you're doing some of that checking. So these might all be behaviors. And I'm hoping that looking at this not only gives you an example of how you might notice how anxiety is impacting you, but also how you might start to intervene. So I call this an emotional cycle because all of these things impact one another. We can break the emotional cycle by intervening in any one of these areas. So in terms of thoughts, can you change those thoughts? Can you identify what you're thinking? Can you evaluate the thoughts? And can they be changed? You know, sometimes these thoughts are real, right? But, you know, can we not, you know, change them to Susie Sunshine and rose-colored glasses, but can we change them to something that's a little bit more helpful? I'll say helpful. You know, I've been through, you know, this is something I don't want to deal with, but I've been through a lot and I've coped so far. I can cope. I can keep coping. You know, my doctor will help me decide what the best next action is. You know, I have family and friends that are supportive of me. So are there thoughts that can be a little bit more helpful that can be modified? And it's okay to worry. So some research has shown that if you schedule worry time, that actually decreases worry throughout the day. So maybe you can set that worry aside. So you say from 5 to 5:30, I'm going to schedule worry time. So when those thoughts pop up during the day, you say, I'm not going to think about it now. I'm going to worry about it during my worry time from 5 to 5:30. Sounds silly, but it actually works. Try it. Thought stopping or thought substitution. So maybe instead, if you kind of get into that spiral where your thoughts are running away with you and you don't know where to go, take a step back and see if you can replace them with something that's a little bit more mundane. I had a patient once who told me she just started thinking about what all the clothes were in her closet. So something that's not going to trigger an anxiety reaction for you. Behaviors and body sensations can also be affected. So as we touched on earlier and how we're going to talk a little bit more about a behavior that might be an effective emotional cycle breaker is exercise. Exercise can also impact body sensations. But I'm going to touch on one other thing that can also impact body sensations, and that's relaxation strategies. So relaxation strategies engage the parasympathetic nervous system that rest and digest, slows your heart rate, slows your blood pressure, slows your breathing, reduces muscle tension so you can have more blood flow to your frontal lobes, think a little bit more clearly, and be able to take a step back and maybe say, you know, how am I going to tackle this difficulty? So I'm going to turn it back over to Mandy, and she's going to lead us through a relaxation strategy.
Thanks, Megan. That was some very helpful information. So now that we've talked a little bit about the cognitive behavioral therapy aspect of things, I think it's also important to talk about some other ways to help manage our anxiety that are a little bit more in tune with our physical sense. So one activity, one way that we can key into those body sensations that Megan had just spoke about that can help us relax and engage that parasympathetic nervous system is by progressive muscle relaxation. So this is a slide that just kind of is a schematic that tells us what progressive muscle relaxation is and the process that you go through. But essentially, it's an activity where you intentionally tighten or tense certain muscle groups and then let them relax. And you're really tuning into the sensation of the muscles once they are relaxed. It helps to improve that awareness of the physical sensations associated with stress and anxiety, and more importantly, how to reduce those sensations once you experience them. So traditionally, we start with the muscles of the toes and of the feet, and then you work up to your head. But it can also be done in reverse order, so there's a lot of liberty in this particular activity. You usually tense the muscles for anywhere from 5 to 8 seconds, and then relax them for anywhere from maybe 10 to 30 seconds. But as a side, when using this type of relaxation technique and having multiple sclerosis, it's important to consider spasticity. So spasticity is that tightness, those muscle spasms, that resistance to movement. Maybe it's that heaviness that you get in your legs and in your arms. Certain positions, for example, laying on your back for some folks, can trigger muscle spasms in the leg where they become really straight and rigid. So positioning with pillows or on the side or completing it again in a seated position may be more effective if someone wants to use this technique. So just take into consideration spasticity and perhaps even get a PT on board to help you strategize what muscles are maybe most appropriate for this technique. Because those weakness or the spasticity can really make this technique really hard to do or simply not effective. So collaborate with a PT to have them help you work through that. But I think what we'll do is we're going to do a very abbreviated version of a progressive muscle relaxation activity. So what I want you guys to do, hopefully you're sitting in a nice comfortable chair. I want you to close your eyes And I don't have that really nice, gentle, therapeutic voice like Megan does, so I apologize for that. But sit in a chair, close your eyes, and what I'm going to have you do is we're just going to go through the sequence on the screen. So you're going to go ahead and tighten your face, tighten, 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 squeeze your face, and now just let it slowly, slowly relax. Let it melt. Let it feel soft between your eyes. Let it feel soft around your mouth. Okay. Let's go ahead and move to the arms. Go ahead and tighten your arms. Make a tight fist. Squeeze your biceps. Squeeze your shoulders. Squeeze your wrists, wrist forearms as tight as you can. And now slowly, slowly let them relax. Exhale. Let them release. Let them melt into your chair. Let them melt into your keyboard. Good. Let's move on. We're going to tighten the shoulders. So squeeze those shoulders up to your ears. Squeeze them, squeeze them, squeeze them, squeeze them. Tighten as much as you can. And now slowly lower them. Let them relax. Let them melt. Feel those shoulder blades drop back into your chair. Feel your breath slow. Okay. Nice work, everyone. We'll skip the last two, but you get the idea. Sometimes just that brief moment of kind of cluing into what your body's doing, cluing into how it's responding, how it's positioned, where it's positioned, can help to relieve some anxiety. Okay, so another way to encourage anxiety reduction or management is by yoga. There was a comment earlier in the chat. Sometimes aerobic exercise is difficult because it does cause elevation in core body temperature, and that makes it really challenging, especially for those folks who have a lot of heat sensitivity. So, yes, other alternatives other than just aerobic exercise can be helpful for managing anxiety, and yoga and breathing exercises or kind of meditative breathing is helpful as well. So from a scientific standpoint, how does yoga help? It encourages that parasympathetic response. So it decreases your heart rate, decreases your respiration or breathing rate, lowers your blood pressure. But another key thing that it does is it does help improve heart rate variability. So in other words, your heart can adjust between a resting state and a state of activity, or that sympathetic, parasympathetic state with a greater fluidity and with a greater ease. And that's really quite similar to how life is. Megan gave some really great examples of how anxiety can just flip on like a switch. So yoga may help to kind of minimize those peaks and valleys that anxiety may contribute to. So, and then last, I like this cartoon. If yoga fails, you can relieve your stress by just drinking wine and wearing yoga pants. That's my favorite. So a little bit more research to real life. Yoga has been proven to be effective and have positive influence on people who have MS who experience depression, fatigue, and anxiety. Large studies have shown positive short-term effects for people who are living with MS. So I know there are many, many, many yoga offerings out there online, in person, books. Wow, there's just a lot out there, which is wonderful. But, evaluate those with a critical eye. But chat with your physical therapist, chat with your healthcare providers, contact the National MS Society to get some really good, reliable resources if you want to start practicing yoga. But one of my personal favorites and personal resources that I'm quite fond of is Eric Small. He is a gentleman who lives with MS, and he has developed some good strategies for adapting yoga for people who live with MS. At one time, I know he had some videos and DVDs that he collaborated with the National MS Society for those. So, again, I would encourage you to reach out to your local chapter and see if they can provide you some local resources. But I wanted to provide you with a couple images and you can see the one, or excuse me, the two right here, some images of some particular poses that have been helpful to help minimize anxiety. Kind of the meditative pose right here, the cat-cow pose is quite popular. Again, these are all not applicable to everyone and not appropriate for everyone. So again, bring your PT back into the equation and have them help you determine what poses might be most helpful and most effective for you. But I want to take us through these three, because again, we're in a nice, hopefully sitting down and in a relaxed chair. So I thought we could try these three together. And if you don't want to try them now, certainly feel free to try these later. But I do want you to be mindful of your body and be mindful of your position in the chair. Please don't use a chair if you're in a chair, like an office chair with wheels. And just be aware of your ability level. And I'll try to comment on some adaptations for positioning as well. So the first one is kind of a seated single leg child's pose. So you just pull your knee up to your chest and kind of rest your head, stretching through kind of the low back and gluteal and the back of the leg. If this is difficult to sustain, if you have limited mobility in your arms or, say, a lot of spasticity in the legs that makes this movement difficult, you can have a chair positioned right here, and then you can just rest the chair. Wow, it's a good thing I'm a PT and not an artist. Have a chair there that you can rest your leg on to help facilitate the movement. So just breathe nice and easy into that stretch. And if you would like, feel free to do that on the other side. Okay, we'll move on to this one next. So again, do what your body is able. If you have one side that's, one arm rather, that's weaker than the other, you can use the stronger arm to help position. So go ahead and interlace your arms, clasp your arms together, crisscross your fingers, and reach way up into the sky, arching your back, taking a nice deep breath, inhaling through the nose and exhaling through the mouth. Stretching those low back muscles, the front of the core, and certainly the arms, and then slowly lower them back down. And lastly, that seated rotation stretch. Again, be cognizant if you're anyone with any low back issues, please don't push into this range of motion, but you'll sit up nice and tall. And you'll use the chair, if you can, to help anchor, and you'll just rotate your midsection, kind of like you're wringing out your midsection like a washcloth. Just pull, breathe into those trunk muscles and those ribs, and then exhale, return to the center. And we'll try that on the other side. Nice inhale in, rotate, wringing out your midsection like a washcloth. Inhale, exhale, and return back to center. Nice job, everyone. I feel quite a bit more relaxed. I hope all of you do as well. So a key feature of yoga, as many of you may know, is the focus on the breath. So breathing alone truly is an exceptional exercise and certainly a really fantastic anxiety reducer. So I think it's important to highlight that respiratory muscle strengthening is critical, and intentional breathing is critical. It reduces stress and minimizes fatigue. It's a great option, a great exercise option, and an anxiety reduction option when you're really having a really terrible, terrible MS fatigue day. The research suggests that a minimum of 3 days a week for 30 minutes can have great results. Now, that seems like a lot to be focusing on your breath, and if that's too much, especially if you're just starting out, you know, sprinkle through the day. 1 to 3 minutes throughout a day can add up to that nice 30-minute sweet spot and hopefully help you overall. So I like this image because breathing is complex, and I think it kind of brings home that there are lots of muscles involved with breathing. So inhalation, or breathing in, is this first image here. And breathing in, our chest and our lungs and our belly fill with air. The ribs expand. The diaphragm, that big muscle right there, moves downward. And when we exhale or breathe out, the chest contracts, the diaphragm relaxes and raises, and the belly flattens and the chest narrows. So lots of muscles that are working in a very timely fashion to help breathing occur. And we have multiple opportunities during the day to improve our breath and certainly improve our relaxed state, hopefully. But a few gasping facts, and before we practice some deep breathing, I wanted to bring this to your attention, further advocating for the need for good intentional breathing practice. 30 to 80% of people who are walking who have MS have muscle weakness in their breathing muscles, and that's slightly higher, 20 to 70%, in folks who are non-ambulatory or not walking. So it's highly variable, but it's present in all levels of MS, in all ability levels. So again, very critical piece that we can try to focus on. So I want to take advantage of this slide in this minute to just practice. So again, it's good for strengthening, but it's also good for relaxation and anxiety reduction and anxiety management. So again, sit up nice comfortably in your chair, with your feet supported and your back supported. And what you're going to do is I'm going to actually have you place one hand on your chest as if you were going to put your hand on your heart, and then put one hand on your belly. And what you'll do is you'll breathe in through your nose slowly. I want your belly to fill with air, not your chest to fill with air. And then breathe out through your mouth as if you were blowing out a candle. I think that cue is really helpful. So when you inhale, your belly should fill with air. When you exhale, you should feel your belly flatten. So let's do that again together. One hand on the chest, one hand on the belly. Inhale through the nose. Belly fills with air. Exhale through the mouth, like you're blowing out a candle, and feel your belly flatten. I'm going to give you a quiet 10 seconds or so and let you do another one of those on your own. Okay. Thank you all for participating. I'll pass the baton back to Megan.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mandy. That was great. I just wanted to touch on one other type of talk therapy that can be helpful for anxiety in multiple sclerosis, and quite frankly for anyone. This is called acceptance and commitment therapy. We've talked about CBT, which, you know, maybe you noticed from what I was saying earlier, is pretty detail-oriented. It's looking at those thoughts, those behaviors, your body sensations. Acceptance and commitment therapy is sort of for the big person picture. So we're looking at the big picture of life and trying to figure out how to move forward. So it's a kind of a newer model of cognitive behavioral therapy. So just a few points here. ACT teaches us how to be present, to be flexible, and to be open. So it's figuring out what matters to you, and doing what it takes to incorporate those values into your life, even if you have to do them in a new way. That kind of pulls in that flexibility and openness aspect. So if family is really important to you and you are always the person that, you know, took care of the family members, and now that's something that's a little bit more difficult for you, can you incorporate family into your life in a new way, in a flexible kind of open way? Can you be a listening ear to somebody? Is there some other way that you can bring family values? So it's really looking at the big picture of what's important to you and how do I move forward. Another aspect of acceptance and commitment therapy is mindfulness, or being in the present moment. A lot of times we live in the past and we live in the future. So we worry about what happened in the past, what we didn't do or what we wish we had done, or we worry about the future, what's going to happen next. So mindfulness brings us back to the present moment. So we're going to do a quick exercise right after this slide that focuses on bringing your mind to the present moment. Acceptance and commitment therapy uses a lot of metaphors. So one of those is the Chinese finger trap. So if you think about a Chinese finger trap, you're trying to pull your two fingers apart. The more you pull, the tighter it gets. If you loosen your fingers or you push together, all of a sudden your fingers are released. So using that as a metaphor, is there a way that you can let go of some of that tension, let go of some of that fight, and then there's some release. There's an aspect of your life that becomes a little bit easier. Touching back on that cognitive behavioral therapy, this is why it's a newer model of cognitive behavioral therapy. It's looking at having a thought versus buying a thought. A lot of things pop into our minds, right? We're going to have thoughts that we don't like, that are unhelpful pretty much every day. But we don't always have to believe those thoughts, or we don't have to let those thoughts control us. So there's a difference between having a thought and really buying into that thought. And another aspect that I touched on really is committed action. So figuring out what you want to do, what's important to you, and committing to acting out those values. So let's do a quick mindfulness exercise. This is something that I think can help all of us bring ourselves into the present moment. And I also think that this type of mindfulness exercise can also help us during actual exercise. I don't know if any of you are like me, but I tend to think when I'm doing any form of exercise, oh, gosh, when is this going to be over? Is this done yet? How many minutes have passed? But if we can, bring our minds into the present moment and kind of notice what's going on around us, it might help us get through those difficult periods. So this exercise is called Notice Five Things. So I want everybody to pause and take a look around you. Notice five things that you can see. I'm going to give you a second here so that you can look around and notice five things that you can see. Now stop and listen carefully. Notice five things that you can hear. And finally, notice things that you can feel in contact with your body. Maybe it's a watch on your wrist, or noticing how your shoes feel on your feet, or how your glasses feel on your face. What are the things that you can feel that are in contact with your body? This is just a really quick exercise that can be used, as I said earlier, kind of replacing some of those spiraling thoughts with something like this, like bringing your mind to the present moment and thinking about not the future, not thinking about the past, but kind of noticing where you are right now. There's tons and tons of mindfulness exercises on the internet. So if you Google mindfulness, you can find tons of these kinds of exercises. Look through them, pick, and see which one might work best for you. I'm going to turn it back over to Mandy here to finish us out.
Great strategies, Megan. So we're going to briefly discuss as we're winding down, what is the true definition of exercise? It's something that is done or performed as a means of practice or training. So this definition suggests or implies that exercise takes time. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of practice, and it takes a lot of training to succeed. So we encourage you to not feel discouraged if you feel like it takes a while to kind of get your mind and body wrapped around these concepts. So how to start or stay consistent with exercise? That is the million-dollar question, and perhaps it could be an entire webinar. I think the hardest part about exercise, whether it be an exercise of the mind, like Megan has introduced us to, or an exercise of the body, the most difficult part about those activities is simply starting and sticking with them. And we encourage you to not just focus on the measurable benefits, and I'm going to speak more towards physical exercise. So we encourage you not to just focus on the measurable benefits of exercise that may be like weight loss or lowering your cholesterol or maybe improving your blood pressure, but rather focus on the immediate benefits. Be mindful, using Megan's phrase, be mindful of how great you feel after you exercise and the exercise, how the exercise affects your mood. So that being said, there were some comments in the chat. I think it's important to find that sweet spot when it comes to physical exercise. It does exist for people who have MS. There's a magic line. I tell my patients this. There's a magic line that it's moving. It's a moving target that you need to work hard enough to try to sustain or improve your physical function, but you don't want to cross that line. And unfortunately, with MS, that line is moving. It's moving from day to day. It's moving from hour to hour. So it's really important to be in tune with the physical sensations of your body so that when you are exercising, you do know when you've hit that point of too much. Or hopefully, you can become so in tune with exercise with the help of, you know, a rehab team that you can stop your activity before you hit that point. So we want to open it up to you guys a little bit. So what are some other strategies for anxiety and stress management that you have found helpful or not helpful? We just encourage you to take a minute and chat in, and we want to highlight your expertise.
You can go ahead and enter any thoughts or ideas right in that chat box, and one person, water aerobics works really well.
Water aerobics is great. I'm going to comment to that one. Exercising the water can be quite helpful for people with MS, especially if you have a significant heat sensitivity. On the flip side, I think it's also important to note when you're in the water, just be cognizant of overdoing, because suddenly when you get out of the water, gravity's back, and it's usually back quite fiercely, so just be cautious of that. Oh, we have lots of great recommendations. Massage and Tai Chi, listening to music, talking with husband, praying, aromatherapy. Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
Our audience at home may not be able to see everyone's comments, but Mandy's mentioned a few. Journaling. One person wrote
also,
medical marijuana. I don't know if you've done any research on that or if you have any thoughts.
I'm not certain about that for anxiety. Go ahead, Megan.
Yeah, I'm not aware of specific studies that have been done looking at that in anxiety, but I can speak to that a little bit. But one comment I wanted to highlight that somebody wrote is UCLA has a great website with different meditation audio clips. So you can go to their website and listen to a lot of these kinds of things like progressive muscle relaxation and deep breathing. There's tons of those kinds of resources out on the web. In terms of medical marijuana or just marijuana in general, there's been some research that suggests that it is helpful for things like spasticity. Keeping in mind, like, any type of medication that you take, there can be side effects, and there's some research suggesting that it can impact cognition. So it's really a matter of what's helpful for you and what symptom is most stressful for you. So kind of looking into it like I would hope that you would any other medication and do what works best for you.
And thank you, everyone, for all of your comments. I hope we were able to highlight a few of your recommendations for stress management as well. We have lots of good feedback about exercise and working with others. So lastly, we want to give you, hopefully this presentation and this conversation that we have had with all of you has provided you with maybe a tool or two that you can use to take home and maybe implement or at least talk with your healthcare providers about. But one last tool you can take home is a template for all of you to use. Where you can highlight a situation where you have a lot of anxiety, creates a lot of anxiety, and then start to kind of consider solutions or strategies to help you manage those challenges. And then again, bring these to your healthcare providers. Bring them to physical therapy. Bring them to your sessions with your mental health providers or with your physicians, and let them work through those with you.
Alrighty, thank you so much, Megan and Mandy, for not only the great information, but got some exercises in, and I do feel a lot more relaxed. So I think it was a great interactive presentation. Hopefully, some tips and tools that we all can use to manage the anxiety in our lives. So we have a few minutes here to get to some questions. If we don't get to your question, I will let you know of some other resources and ways that we can try to answer your questions for you. We had a couple questions. We talked about sort of the relationship between exercise and anxiety and MS. So we had a question, if your anxiety predates the MS, will MS make it worse? And does anxiety kind of fluctuate, you know, when your symptoms are really bad, does there tend to be more anxiety? And when symptoms lessen a little bit, does it tend to be less anxiety? Is there a relationship between those?
I can take that one on. You know, so this sort of gets back to that idea of anxiety being an area of emerging research. We know that it's associated with MS, associated with exacerbations, and we know that it's more common in MS, but we don't really know if anxiety occurs prior to MS, whether that was a symptom that, you know, was just came on a lot earlier than other symptoms, if MS will make that those symptoms worse. What we do know is that things like medications and talk therapy, exercise, all of those things have been shown to be effective for anxiety symptoms in multiple sclerosis. So, I wish I had a better answer for that person, but we're just not there yet in terms of research.
And on that note, we had another participant ask specifically about the endorphins that get released from exercise. Has there been any research or that MS can inhibit or affect the release of those endorphins?
I can take that one. Not to my knowledge. Nope. So the response that people with MS have to exercise is generally pretty comparable to as people who don't have MS.
Great, thank you. Another question for Mandy. You mentioned the RPE scale. We had a participant ask if there was a relationship between the RPE scale and your heart rate or the time spent doing the aerobic exercise. Is there a correlation, I guess, specifically with heart rate and RPE?
Yeah, great question. So there is research that supports the correlation. Actually, it's a pretty accurate correlation, interestingly enough, between what my moderate intensity or your moderate intensity exercise is and what is actually a calculated heart rate moderate intensity exercise. So yes, that's why we actually like to use that RPE scale a lot in therapy. And the reason being, it's a lot easier to use and it's generally quite accurate versus having people while they're exercising either wearing a monitor or trying to take their heart rate or find their pulse during that. And again, I just think it reinforces that cluing into your body and how it's feeling and what are those physical sensations, positive and negative, that you're experiencing while you're exercising.
We had another participant ask about chiropractic treatments and if that assists with treating anxiety. Either of you know anything specifically about chiropractic treatments?
You know, I can't comment on that. I don't know. Megan, do you know of any evidence?
I'm not sure about that either, unfortunately.
Good question, though.
Yeah.
Good question. We actually got lots of great questions. We had a couple people ask about Tai Chi and if that was also effective along with yoga in managing anxiety.
Yeah, I can take this one, too. So I don't know specifically. I can't cite any specific research related to Tai Chi, but considering it's a kind of a mindful movement balance and kind of under the same umbrella as yoga and some of those kind of movement therapies, I would suspect that it would have a positive effect. Now, I can't, again, I don't have evidence to support that one way or the other, but certainly if it makes, if it has a positive effect for the individual, I would never discourage someone from doing that because it's a good alternative exercise as well.
Excellent. We have time for a couple more. This is sort of, I think, a great general question for a lot of people out there. The question is, what do you do to start if you're not in shape enough to do the light or moderate activity? Where, what would your suggestions be, even just to start getting in an exercise routine?
Great question. So I would first and foremost reach out to a physical therapist who has experience treating people who have MS. So that they can help you figure out ways to exercise safely and to be successful with exercise. Because there is nothing more discouraging for people who are trying to get in an exercise program to be prescribed an exercise program that they cannot be successful with. It's terribly discouraging. And then exercise becomes something that people don't want to do or partake in. So what I would say is, first and foremost, talk to a physical therapist. And something you could do is something as simple as just working on the breathing exercises, that diaphragmatic breathing that we introduced during this webinar. It would be a very simple and safe way, unless you have any breathing issues, to potentially start into exercise. But I would definitely talk to a PT first.
Mandy, piggybacking on that, and I also saw a question pop up about where to find a psychologist or psychiatrist or other mental health or other provider, clinical provider. The National MS Society has lists of people who have experience with MS. I think it's called Partners in Care. So if you're looking for a specific type of provider, like a physical therapist or psychologist or psychiatrist, that might be a good place to start.
Great comment.
That's a great resource. Another great question. One participant, every time she engages in aerobic exercise, she experiences heat sensitivity. The heat sensitivity causes more pain and even more anxiety. So it's kind of a vicious cycle. So in terms of heat sensitivity, any suggestions on controlling temperature and not having it interfere with your exercise?
You bet. So first and foremost, I would be certain that the environment is as cool as possible. So cool room, cool fan, make sure it's an optimal time of day. And then I would also encourage that person to consider some cooling products that are out there. So Polar Products is polarproducts.com, I believe. They are an organization that sells cooling devices that you can wear around your shoulders, around your trunk, the cooling vest, the cooling devices around the wrists, things like that can be quite helpful for keeping the core body temperature down. I would say if all of those strategies are in place and I would and still having some challenge associated with aerobic exercise, then I would again go back to the PT, go back to the drawing board, and see if maybe the aerobic exercise needs to be sprinkled throughout the day rather than during one specific time period. So, for example, rather than riding a stationary bike for 10 minutes, maybe this person would do some seated boxing or seated aerobic exercise for 2 minutes to 3 minutes intermittently through the day.
Excellent. Thank you, Mandy. Well, we have time for one more question, and then we'll talk about some other resources. But it's a similar question, but her concern is with the inability to sleep. And so having MS, she's having a hard time sleeping. And then being tired and not being able to exercise. So the question is why does MS affect your ability to sleep, and what are some strategies to deal with that?
That's a really great question. So this is Megan. I'll take that one. It's a really great question. It's a little bit of a complex question. There are a number of different factors that can impact your sleep. So I would suggest seeing a mental health provider or your neurologist or even your primary care doctor and assessing those sleep symptoms. So are you having difficulty falling asleep, st- staying asleep or waking up too early. If it's difficulty falling asleep and you notice that your mind is sort of spinning, it might be that anxiety or worry is getting in the way, and using some of the relaxation strategies that we talked about today, or the thought stopping or scheduling worry time, those kinds of things might be helpful. But I also want to let everybody know, sleep isn't what this webinar is about, but sleep difficulties are more common in people with MS, and things like sleep apnea are more common. So it would be helpful to make sure that you talk with a medical provider and make sure that you don't need to get something like a sleep study to rule out other reasons why your sleep is impacted other than just worry. So I would say, A, is kind of notice when it's happening. If it's mostly falling asleep, then usually that's associated with more anxiety, and using some of the strategies we talked about today would be helpful. Talking to a medical provider, telling them your symptoms, and seeing if you need a referral to a sleep center or a sleep specialist. Even tracking your sleep and seeing if there's certain patterns that you're noticing. So those would be my answers to that question.
Very good. Thank you so much, Megan and Mandy, for all that wonderful information and a great presentation. And thank you, everyone, for joining us this evening. As a reminder, as soon as we are done here, we will email PDF copies of the slides to everyone because it's automatically sent to over 1,000 people. It may end up in junk or spam folders, but definitely keep your eye out for that. And if for some reason you didn't get the email, you can go back to your original registration and call our office at CanDo MS or send an email, and we'll be happy to send those out to you so you can go back and see this great information. And the whole presentation, including the audio, will be available to stream at your convenience beginning on Thursday on our website, which is mscandu.org. Also in that email, you'll get a number of great resources that you continue finding more information. We truly believe that the more knowledge you have, the better lives you can live beyond your MS. So there are some great links there that will be included in your email, some deep breathing exercises and some great visualization and guided imagery. So please see those resources. And then also on the CanDo MS website, there are a number of great articles. Megan and Mandy wrote an article on anxiety and exercise that will also be provided to you, as well as all of our webinars are available to stream. We have a program called Ask the CanDo Team, and that's where you can email us a question that you have about living wellness-based lives with MS, and we will pass that on to our team of MS consultants all over the country and try to get an answer for you, and then we publish those answers online so other people can benefit from that information sharing. So if we didn't get to your question tonight, there's certainly opportunities to get information and ask your questions. So we truly appreciate you looking to CanDo MS as a great resource. As well as the National MS Society, they have an extensive library of information, a lot on exercise and its relationship to MS and also anxiety. So please check out those resources. And then finally, please join us next month. We do our free webinar on the second Tuesday of every month, same time, 8 o'clock Eastern. And our next topic, we try to really get a balanced approach to being empowered with MS. And so next month we're going to talk about health insurance and the ins and outs of it and what you need to know. So join us, please, September 13th. You can register online at mscandu.org. As always, it's free, and be able to access from the convenience of your own home. And finally, I want to thank our generous sponsors. We can't put on these programs without their support. So thank you all so much for joining us. And, again, thank you so much to Megan and Mandy for giving your time and sharing some great information to improve our lives. So thank you, everyone, and have a wonderful evening.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.